Welcome to We Are The Watchers.
This is episode 238, top of the day to you. Heath, how are you?
Hey, I'm fantastic. I'm so excited to be back on The Watchers.
It's been far too long. It really has just been like an obscene amount of time. This should not have gone for this long.
Well, you know, it's been a busy couple of years, so
yeah,
it is what it is. We're back, ready to go today. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. I also know some of the things that you've been watching, and I know that they are ones that I'm interested in. So I want to hear your take and your review so that I can decide whether or not I should be watching them as well.
All right.
Greetings, subscribers and members of the Watchersville's 100th newsletter. This week's edition is brought to you by the countless times I've said that sentence. You'd think I'd record it once and add it into each newsletter, but no, it's a fresh delivery every time because you're worth it. And I forget to make a generic intro. As we celebrate by enjoying supermarket-bought cake, Geraldine, who creates the local crosswords, has complained about how much of a time waste tea and cake is to her day. Despite our editor-in-chief allocating a whopping 7 minutes for the party, we here at Watchersville Newsletter have made merry and patted ourselves on the back for getting 100 issues out the door. The council are thrilled with our accomplishment and have organised a public party at the gazebo this Thursday night. There will be music, care of the local marching band, food and beverages thanks to the delicious local food trucks, and fire eaters and breathers. No one asks them to come along, it's just that they usually meet up each Thursday night at the same location to practice. It'll be great to see them in action, and they will provide lighting as the gazebo's fairy lights are on the blink again. The folk in the city way down south have been heard admitting that our town is actually pretty good to visit. Comments were heard by a group of friends from Watchersville who were on a weekend away. They saw the river, drank coffee, did some shopping, and enjoyed the use of the novel public transport, Giant Swans. While they were partaking in a beer, coffee-flavoured of course, at a pub, they overheard some locals saying that Watchersville isn't as bad as they pretend it is. A win for us! Murray Madison's Camels will perform their rendition of Beyoncé's Single Ladies at next week's Talent Quest. When asked if they'll be singing and dancing, Murray said yes, the whole shebang. What talented creatures! We can't wait to see their costumes. That's it for now. Stay safe and happy, all residents of Watchersville.
Let's get into it. We'll have some listener questions later on in the podcast, as well as the watching suggestions. But first, let's crack on into the news. So I don't know if you're like a massive Marvel or Daredevil or Hawkeye fan, but I know that Tom is, and I know that he likes to talk about this kind of stuff. So I've popped it in here just because Daredevil and Kingpin from the show Daredevil will both be in Disney Plus's spin-off of Hawkeye, which was that show with Hawkeye, but it was kind of like a Christmas series as well, all rolled into one at the end of last year. Did you watch any of it?
Well, I tried.
At least you gave it a go.
No, the very first time I did the podcast,
yeah,
you know, I didn't stake much claim in being a Marvel fan. But since then,
yeah,
I guess I've had a little time to sit back and get into it because I've watched a lot of things and I've enjoyed a lot of things. And so I have Disney Plus and I'm all about the Marvel stuff. But I just – there's something about that one. It's not bad. It's not great.
Yeah.
I just, it's hard to get into. And I don't know. I just remember the first time I ever even was introduced to Marvel characters. I was a kid. I didn't know what they were, but my dad brought me this deck of cards. It was like a Marvel playing card set. And instead of kings and queens and clubs, it would be Marvel characters. So that was my first exposure to them. And I remember as a kid, I always loved the Hawkeye card. I thought his costume was really cool. And I thought the bow and arrow was a great talent, and you know, that looked like a really fun thing to do. But he was one of my favorites then, but I tried to get into it and I couldn't.
Do you think it was because it was trying to sort of be a Marvel show, like slash movie storyline, as well as a Christmas sort of thing? Do you think that maybe that mixture didn't work for you?
Was it wearing too many hats as a series? No, yeah. I think that they did the best thing that they could with it. And the problem for me was that I got into Loki so much, the series. Yeah, I got into WandaVision so deeply that it was just the middle of the road for me. And I couldn't connect with it. But
yeah,
like you said, there's going to be characters that appeared in that who are now moving on to do other things. So it's kind of something that it's homework, I guess, now at this point. I've got to watch it.
Yeah. And that's the thing about Marvel. Yeah, like they do all of this stuff and sprinkle bits and pieces in so that you have to watch it all if you want to keep on top of things. It can be a little overwhelming at times.
Well, absolutely. But I'm willing to soldier through it. And no, I'm going to give it another shot. Just as of today, yes. I have not watched it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. I mean, at least you're open to it. You haven't gone, nah, this is, I'm not, it's not for me. Never going to do it ever again.
Oh, I'm open, baby. Wide open.
Now, I know that you'll be talking about Thor, Love and Thunder in the watching suggestions a little bit later on, but it sounds like it's been quite a success over in the US. It made $143 million over the weekend, making it the biggest Thor film, you know, in terms of money making. Were you surprised when you went? Was it packed? Like, what was the situation?
Well, I went to a big luxury theater that was playing in an IMAX.
Nice.
For this one, I don't know. I just felt like I wanted to see it in IMAX, so I did. And it wasn't packed. I don't know if it had anything to do with the tickets being a little more expensive, or I don't know what it was, but yeah, IMAX tickets are usually a few dollars more.
Yeah.
But the theater I was in was great. And we're going to talk about it more later, or are we talking about it now?
We'll talk about a bit more later. So with the IMAX, like, do you also get, you know how sometimes you can go to those fancy theaters and you've got like that they'll bring you the food at a certain time during the movie? Is that the kind of thing that you went to?
It was, yeah. Nice. I didn't take advantage of any of those services because I didn't, you know, I wanted to pay full attention to the movie this time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Not feel buzzed or tipsy or anything by having a beer or a cocktail.
Yeah,
we got some candy and like a frozen drink. But was I surprised that it was a big success? Yes and no. I mean, Marvel movies pretty much dominate at the box office right now.
Yeah.
And the last one I saw in theaters was Doctor Strange, number two.
Yep.
But what I am surprised at is you said this is the biggest, you know, Thor film, and it's number four. It's number four. And I don't know if you watched all four, but they're kind of all over the place. There was a little bit of drama with Natalie Portman. She was a big fan of one of the directors, I think, and it was a female. And they parted ways for some reason, so Natalie kind of left the project.
Yeah.
But it was good to have her back in this. So I think that was a big reason, because just aside from the fact that, you know, she's really good in this movie, she's really good in a lot of movies, and she is kind of low-key these days, but she's actually, you know, an A-list actress who it's good to see her in movies. It's, you know, it's like, hey, there she is, you know, back again.
Yeah.
So there's a familiarity to it with her being back as part of the movie. So even though it's number four, which usually they fizzle out by this point, it's very rare that the fourth sequel is the biggest movie, but it's, no, I wasn't surprised. I think this movie was,
worth it.
I think it was deserving.
Yeah. Nice. I was just looking and, it's the third best opening, for a pandemic. Well, a pandemic era. So almost like post, I know everybody's still catching COVID for the first or second time, or maybe even third. I don't know. But Spider-Man No Way Home, and then Doctor Strange, and then Thor, which I think is interesting. Having said that though, that second Top Gun movie has been just massive, hasn't it? Did you, I didn't see it. Have you seen it?
It's kind of been on and off my list of movies to see.
Yeah.
I know my folks wanted to go see it, but my thing is I like to see movies in order of how they were released, whether it's in real time or not. So I just don't like to go backwards. So I really wanted to watch over the first Top Gun because I remember seeing it on TV in different places growing up, but that movie's almost as old as I am. So
yeah.
So I really need to go back and do a refresher because I want to watch this a lot. I've heard a lot of good things about the new one, and I want to see it with, you know, with exposure to the original one. So, like I said, it's on my list, and I'm proud of Tom Cruise because he's like, you know, he got into Scientology, and he he's not really America's, I guess, favorite, you know, homegrown movie star anymore. But he was a big American star in the 80s and 90s, and you know, he's had a really amazing career. And it's nice to see something like this movie and his talent overshadow the tabloid stuff, the marriages and the Scientology and stuff. So I was, even though I'm not necessarily a huge fan of Tom Cruise, I was really happy for him to be in this, you know, to break this record and have this huge opening at this time in his career. You know, that's impressive.
And what a good call, because it was his call to hold it off and not to let it go to a streaming site and to wait. You know, I mean, that movie was supposed to come out a couple of years ago, and to make everybody, including all of the executive producers and whatnot, you know, the actual movie house, wait a couple of years and then put it out onto into theaters, and it's really paid off. And I don't think there are many stars that could have made that call and had everybody follow that decision with them. I mean, Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise. Well,
when it comes to Hollywood, Tom Cruise is definitely well known as a diva, but in this case, you know, he is. But in this case, it paid off for him. I mean, he's a talented actor. He knows the business. He's a bona fide, legitimate movie star. And he has been for the last 30, 40 years, I think. So, you know, that with that comes some special wisdom. And, you know, I think he just believed in this project so much, and he was right. And that's awesome.
And I reckon the makers of the Mission Impossible films, because I believe that's his next one lined up. I'm not sure when it's coming out, but they must be like, yes, we're so glad that Top Gun was a hit, because now people are going to come into a Mission Impossible sequel. You know, like, they're far down in the franchise. They'll be like, yes, this is great. Like, people are going to want to go and see it, not just because it's Mission Impossible, because Tom Cruise is back, baby.
Tom Cruise is back. Yeah, we can actually focus on his career in the movie that he's doing instead of the tabloid stuff. Yeah. And that's nice.
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's a real point you've got there. Like, we don't need to know everything about movie actors all the time. Like, if
we don't.
If we just know what films they do, maybe that's enough sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on the person. Some people are just so, I don't know, they just have that X factor, I guess is what it's called. Where you just have to know more about them and you're just dying to know more. But Tom Cruise at this time in his life is not one of those people for me, but I do believe in his talent, and he's good at movies. So do that. I mean, stay in your lane, do what you're good at.
Yes,
I love that.
Stay in your lane. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of lanes, beautiful segue right here. So Back to the Future, the musical. It's been on the West End and now it's going to be in Broadway next year. Firstly, I had no idea that Back to the Future was a musical. Did you? I missed this one.
I knew it was a movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I knew it was a trilogy. I didn't know it was a musical, but I'm not surprised. There's been so many musical adaptations that have been successes lately. I mean, there was Spider-Man and Bono. He did the score for that.
Oh, yeah, that's huge, right. Hit. Yep.
There was Green Day's American Idiot, which was, you know, just started out as an album and they wrote a whole play around it.
It's crazy.
Same with Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill. I mean, there's so many unconventional Broadway plays that are becoming massive hits that I'm not shocked by it, but I'm interested in it because I've been fortunate enough, I think, to see two Broadway shows actually, you know, on Broadway in New York City.
Nice. What'd you see?
Wicked.
Oh, yes.
And that was a really fun experience because that was with a mutual friend of ours.
Ah, yeah, right. Bit
so
of a
I
dag?
Think that was my first
Bit
one.
Of a dag?
Yes, I did. Thanks too, because I wouldn't have been able to do that experience. So it was awesome.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then the second one that I got to see most recently was Kinky Boots, which
that's supposed to be good.
I didn't know much about it. I mean, I knew Cyndi Lauper had to do with the score, so I love that. But it's amazing. It was really, really good. It was so good. So I'm a fan of anything that I've seen on Broadway so far. And then here, I'm in Las Vegas, which, you know, I don't know if the listeners can remember that, but I'm in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA. So we have a place called the Smith Center. And so we get a lot of off-Broadway productions that are coming through. So, and of course the hotels all have, you know, ballrooms and different performing arts centers. So there's a lot of different plays that come through Las Vegas. So I'm really fortunate to, if I don't get the chance to see it in New York City, which I don't very often, because it's on the other side of the country. But when I don't, I get to sometimes see it here. And for instance, I saw The Lion King here, which was off Broadway, but it was amazing. That was one of my favorites. I mean, I really didn't see that coming. I just fell in love with that play. Everything that they did with the live adaptation, you know, bringing it to life on stage was totally different than the Disney movie, but it was still had that Disney feel. So, I support Back to the Future. I support anything as a musical. Give it a shot.
Yeah, why not? And Back to the Future, like when I think about it, you know, the story is obviously the thing that comes to mind first off. But there were songs, you know, you had the 80s songs, and then when you went back to the 1950s, there were a lot of, you know, songs that were really popular then. So I can imagine that they would be able to fill up a musical with music from the soundtrack, which is pretty cool. But this DeLorean, right? So they've got this DeLorean as like a set piece for the musical. $300,000 this cost. It twists, tilts, goes forward, revolves backwards and around. And it kind of, I haven't heard any horror stories from it, which is really good. But do you remember the stories that were coming out of the Spider-Man musical where like things would just break and Spider-Man would go flying into the audience, like really dangerous things? So I haven't heard anything like that with the DeLorean set piece, but it's what an expensive prop.
Expensive, but probably going to be totally worth it. I mean, I can see that being the foundation of the whole show.
Yeah.
And although Broadway is so cool because you don't need expensive, fancy props, but they're nice. I mean, they're as a watcher, as a viewer, as a playgoer, they're amazing. But also, it's kind of cool to see when they do things unconventionally and maybe use, you know, stage combat or interpretive movement or coming together like as a group to form different props or different backgrounds. Or I remember in Kinky Boots, there's this great scene where there's a fight and it's like a boxing fight in a ring, and two girls get on the ground and they kind of put their high heel shoe up in the air and they kind of form what's supposed to be the boxing ring.
Yeah,
and
cool.
it's really, really well done. And that's probably one of my favorite scenes. So, and that's something that didn't cost a lot of money for props. It just takes a lot of coordination for the characters, which is all about talent, so I'm all for that. But with the Back to the Future, you have to have
the DeLorean.
You have to. It's a must.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I'm looking forward to with this one is there are so many classic lines from Back to the Future, and you know they're going to deliver them perfectly, word for word, line for line, and the audience is going to lap it up. And if or when I'm heading back to the US, we've got to go to Broadway with our mutual friend and make sure we go and watch this one. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, it's on the list of things to do because there's a lot of them that I would like to see if that actually happens. We're all in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, like
there's a lot of stuff that we need to see, isn't there?
I know. We're going to be busy every single night. I mean, you mentioned Jagged Little Pill, the musical. I've seen it here in Australia. I thought Natalie Bassingthwaite, who was like the lead here, did an amazing job, and everybody had amazing voices. But, oh my gosh, it just really highlighted how amazing Alanis's voice really is and how it doesn't matter how good you are, you just can't replicate it.
Yeah, uniqueness is very important. And she's definitely has her niche and she stays in her lane. And
everything
she does with that album just is, it turns to gold. And there's just so many layers of talent that went to that album and record, and it's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So you ended up seeing that musical or not yet?
I'm still waiting to see that one.
It was just before like the pandemic, so
I just didn't make it out to New York City.
Yeah.
And it hasn't been here yet. I'm hoping that it becomes a traveling show, at least
surely
in North America. I know it's already in Australia,
yeah,
which you guys are lucky. But I definitely will check it out any way I can. It's on my list of things to do. That's why I said if we get together, it's going to be
that one.
We can rewatch Kinky Boots.
Yes, I'll be
on. Back to the Future. We can even check out Spider-Man. I don't know if that one's still running.
we'll go there and make sure that everything's harnessed properly. Spider-Man, are you harnessed properly? He's like, I'm using web. We're like, no, Matt, come on. We know.
What are you doing here? Oh, we're just double checking for safety. We just don't want any accents during our show. You know, we got a podcast to do after this. We got listeners waiting to hear, and we want everybody to play it safe tonight.
Positive,
we want a good, happy show.
Positive, happy, safe. That's what we're all about.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh!
Follow the Watchers on Twitter @TheWatchersPod1.
Do you remember back in the day, when would it have been, like the early 2000s, and 50 Cent was talking about, hey, it's your birthday, we've got to party like it's your birthday, we've got to sip Bacardi like it's your birthday because we don't give a something or other because it's your birthday. And then he had a couple of other songs that I don't know, they're probably bigger there, but they weren't as big here in Australia. But like he's definitely carved an acting niche out for himself over the years. And I don't know, are you into horror films? Is that kind of a thing that you to watch? Yeah, yeah.
Most death. Oh,
so,
yeah.
So not just Halloween, like all year round, you're into it?
Oh, yeah. I love a good horror. I mean, it depends on the night, too. If I'm all alone and it's dark,
yeah,
maybe I'll skip it. But any other time, I'm usually
in the daytime with lots of people.
Oh, yes.
Safe in the middle.
Bring it on.
Well, he's going to star in a new horror film called Skill House. And I'll give you a quick rundown, bit of a synopsis. It's a dark satire of social media and influencer culture and what those new to the sphere are willing to do to attain the fame. Now, this sounds, yeah, cool. Like, it doesn't really give you much information, I don't think. I'm kind of waiting for a trailer. But what I thought was really interesting is that TikTok, as in the social media platform, TikTok is part of this production, part of this collaboration. And I'm just really intrigued to see that they're talking about social media in a dark horror way. I can't wrap my head around this one. And they've got people like 50 Cent in there, Curtis Jackson, as he's known when he's acting. Super fascinated to see how this turns out. If it turns out, obviously they're going to promote it on TikTok, but how? You know, like there's so many questions here.
Yeah, this is a whole new world for me. A whole new world.
Don't you dare close your eyes.
I'm not on TikTok really, yeah. And I don't really know fundamentally how it works to begin with. So to promote something on there and have this whole campaign on there, I don't understand how that is. So good on for the younger generation who understands all that and is trying to do new things.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds to me a little Beyonce-ish, like with this digital drop kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like new ways of delivering media, which is cool. I'm aware that 50 Cent does acting work. Yeah. I have not seen him anything, or I've not seen anything he's been in. I remember though, there was something that there was a role and he lost a lot of weight and he got really skinny.
Right.
And I remember,
yeah.
And anytime they do that, or anytime there's any kind of body modification or transformation, I think you get taken more seriously in Hollywood. Like when Jared Leto gains weight for a role,
yeah.
or
Christian Bale
losing the weight for the role,
yeah.
or Charlize Theron, who gained weight for Monster. So anytime there's body modification, you get taken more seriously. So I don't know where 50 stands as far as, you know, being a serious actor in Hollywood, but I don't think horror films get taken seriously a lot of times.
No.
I mean, I know they're good money makers like The Scream. So maybe this is a kind of a comeback kind of thing.
Maybe.
For his acting career, just trying to do something new, get his name back out there, remind people that he's does acting. I don't know, maybe that's why they have him. But I did watch him at the Super Bowl halftime show and I thought he did a great job.
It's almost like, you know when Netflix and other streaming platforms decided to get into making their own films and they would throw a couple of them in there for Oscar contention, right? They're like, yep.
Right.
Are you interested? This is what we've got. We've got A Marriage Story with Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson, like, who wants it? This is really good. It's quite depressing. Therefore, it's probably Oscar worthy. And we all went, wow, that's so weird. It didn't come into cinemas. How could it possibly be? Actually, no, they did start putting some of them into cinemas because in the beginning, films couldn't be eligible for Oscars and other maybe Golden Globes, I can't remember. But they couldn't be eligible if they hadn't appeared in the cinema. So maybe now we'll start getting films from Twitter, TikTok, like an Instagram film. It's a whole new world, and I'm intrigued to see how this one goes. And I don't know, I kind of feel like with TikTok and a horror story, there has to be some sort of positive moral at the end where, you know, like Full House kind of thing where a Tanner comes out and starts telling DJ the real moral of this story is that TikTok's fine and all the other social media platforms are the evil ones or something. I don't know. It could go really brilliantly or really badly. And if it goes badly, I hope they just like lay into it, like be self-aware of that and just have fun.
Well, first of all, I have to say, as a 90s, 80s, 90s kid, if there are any mentions of Full House or any Tanners, the only cast members I'm willing to accept any kind of commentary from are the Olsen twins.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And they don't talk.
I don't want to see John Stamos pop out. No. I don't want to see anybody. The Olsen twins from here on out.
Oh, no one.
We've seen the Netflix, Fuller House. We've been there. We've done that. We're done with that cast. Who I want to see is the Olsen twins.
Yeah.
So if they're a part of this, then I'm
in. Can you imagine?
But
they come back with 50 Cent in a TikTok horror film. People are like, this is the most 2022 sentence I've ever heard.
Hey, like I said, any project that they're attached to, I'm down for, even if I have to watch 50 Cent in it.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. I get you 100%. Now, our mutual friend actually messaged me the other day and said, I've got a recommendation for you. It's on Apple TV Plus or Apple Plus, whatever. It's called Loot. It's got Maya Rudolph in it. And I was like, I have heard about this and I do really want to watch it because everything that Maya Rudolph does, I think, is brilliant. Like, I just think she's amazing. But I don't have Apple Plus. And I'm really like now tempted to get it at least just for a trial so that I can watch her show Loot, that comedy that she's starring in, she's executive producing in. Do you have Apple Plus?
I don't. That's one streaming service I am not invested in, and I haven't yet, so I've kind of just kept away from it. I've seen a couple of things that have kind of, you know, sparked my interest a little bit.
Same.
But I've not fired away on that one yet. I've not engaged with the Apple Plus, Apple TV. I do, however, I mean, I appreciate the recommendation. I'm just based on who gave it to you, I would like to I'd be interested in seeing it. But I would have to do is I'd have to compile a big list of whatever I would want to see on Apple TV and maybe just watch it for the free trial period.
Yep.
And see how I like it. Because I feel like I'm already overwhelmed with stuff to watch right now.
I know. It's like you go onto a streaming platform, you're like, what? Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm still continuing watching these, which I like, and then all of these new ones are recommended to me. I don't know where to start, and then you just end up just scrolling through and then giving up after 10 minutes. That's what I still do. It's like it is overwhelming, but I'm kind of wondering whether to hold off for the trial period of Apple TV because they've announced a second season of Loot. Now, this show isn't even finished. Like, I think it's a 10 episode season, hasn't even finished, and they've already said that they're renewing it for a second season. And another thing that I'm really interested in is that her production company, Animal Pictures, which also Natasha Lyonne is a part of, like they co-own it. Now they did Russian Doll on Netflix. Did you get into that?
No, but I'm familiar with Natasha Lyonne and the types of projects that she does.
Yeah.
And so I can kind of visualize what it could be like. And I would give it a chance.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it came across my screen.
So maybe I have to wait a little while until this second season comes along and whatever their first look deal is, get that made and then I'll do it. But Loot's about a billionaire who her perfect life falls apart when her husband of 20 years betrays her and her public spiral becomes tabloid fodder. And I think I can really just picture Maya Rudolph showing that kind of regal billionaire facade that slowly gets chipped away by everybody watching the worst part of her life so far unfold. And I think she could do it with great hilarity. So I really want to watch it, but I've got to wait for that trial.
Yeah, there's so many apps. I was listening to a past episode of Watchers and catching up, and yeah. I remember you talking about you find a lot of good stuff on Amazon.
Yeah, I do.
Amazon Prime app. Right, so you got your hands full on there. There's all kinds of good things.
And Disney, like everything that Disney's ever made and all of that Hulu stuff, or it's called Star here, like it's just absolutely jam-packed. And then you've got Netflix that just throws out the most random stuff that sometimes you're like, what is this? I'm going to give it a go.
Well, the reason I brought up Amazon Prime, though, is because there's something that I wanted to talk about that's coming out on there.
Which one?
And I'm sure you're in suspense, but you'll have to check it out because I already know you subscribe. But, you know, in the USA right now, there's a really hot topic, and it's trans women, you know, in biological women's sports.
Yep.
And I know this is not a political show, so we don't really have to get into that, but I just think it's kind of interesting timing because I was reading about something coming out on Amazon. It's a league of their own, but it's the TV series.
Oh,
so
I
don't know if
this.
I need to remind you and listeners what a league of their own actually is. Mm-hmm. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was a movie. From the 90s.
Gina Davies, Madonna, yes. Rosie O'Donnell, Laurie Petty.
Oh, stop right there. Listen, Leah, this is why I wanted to talk about this. As you said, it's a classic 90s movie. If you're an 80s, 90s kid like us, you grew up on it.
All about
I don't know
it.
About in Australia. It was popular in the
it
USA
was popular
on different
here.
TV channels.
Yeah.
Syndication. You know, Madonna's in it, who was a huge star at the time.
Massive.
And Rosie, this was before her TV show, but she was actually, you know, an up-and-coming, kind of like a rising star at
she
the time.
She was like a
too,
stand-up or something, wasn't she? Stand-up comedian?
Yes, Leah. But so. Leah,
yes.
This
yes.
that we're talking about is lovable, couche shooting, league of their own 90s Rosie, okay? But Leah, forget everything you know when it comes to this new series.
Yeah, right.
Forget everything you know about lovable Rosie.
Oh, gosh.
So it's been confirmed that Rosie O'Donnell will appear in this upcoming Prime Video series adaptation, and it's been confirmed by Entertainment Weekly. But she's not playing herself. And I don't know if you can go to the site now or if you want to check it out later, but if anybody wants to check it out at home who's listening, it's on the Entertainment Weekly and the Entertainment Weekly website, and there's a picture of her character. Her character is a non-gender conforming bar owner who I guess befriends the team. But if you go to the website and look at the picture, it's absolutely terrifying. And I mean that in the nicest way.
Oh, yeah. I'm just looking at it now. You know what? I wouldn't have recognized.
She looks like Donald Trump, and I don't know why that was the choice. But
because it's set during World War II, right? So she.
I don't know what the choice was here, Leah, but all my 90s rosy nostalgia, this is not it. This
interesting.
Is not it.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice for sure. I've never seen Rosie look in any role like this. And I'm not saying it's a bad look. I'm just saying for me,
it took you by surprise.
It's a strong look. I mean, I don't know if you remember the haircut back in maybe the early 2000s with kind of the shaved.
Yes.
That was a big story for Rosie, that haircut. And I think this look is definitely something that is going to be talked about.
Yeah. It's not quite Donald Trump, but it's a little like the actual hair itself. It's not quite Donald Trump. Maybe because it's not orange, you know. I just think of his hair as orange. But, of course, you've got Abby Jacobson in this version of A League of Their Own, Darcy Carden, who was in A Good Life. No, what's it called? A Good Place? I've already forgotten one of my favorite shows the last few years, and I've already forgotten what it's called. Abby Jacobson was in Broad City, which – I thought was hilarious. So I, you know what, I'm definitely going to give this a go, this show a go. I'm same with you. I really, really love the original. Like for me, when I think about it, I think about, you know, having it recorded on VHS, off the television, watching it so often that I knew exactly when the ad started and stopped, you know, so I could fast forward it perfectly. So there's a lot riding on my nostalgia here, and I just don't want them to ruin that for me. And, you know,
for me, this picture has ruined it. This used to be my playground. Yes. It's over. Playground is closed. Shut down the slide.
Still crying at baseball. This picture,
I don't know. I'm glad it's just a cameo. I'm still going to give it a chance. But there's nothing like the 90s Rosie for me. She's another one who's taken her career in a different direction than I expected.
So the last time I saw Lori Petty, she was in Orange is the New Black. She should make an appearance in it. I mean, she was one of the main stars in the film. She should be in it. Maybe they're holding back some of the cameos as like surprises for us.
I hope so. I mean, I love when they get, you know, old cast members involved in new spinoffs and projects, even in unconventional ways like with Rosie. But yeah, I would love to see her return.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's watch it and then we'll reconvene afterwards and see what we thought. What do you reckon?
Oh, absolutely. Sounds like a plan.
Brilliant. We have got some listener questions coming up for us a little bit later on, but let's get into these watching suggestions.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
I know that you have been watching some pretty big ones and you've watched quite a few, but I need to, we just have to cover Thor Love and Thunder right now. You saw it at the IMAX. It was the biggest movie over the last weekend in the US. What did you think?
I was a huge fan. I really awesome. Like, I didn't love the first two movies. I thought they were great. Like Chris Hemsworth, I thought they did good things with the character of Thor, and all the special effects were really good. They were, you know, good standalone movies. The second one that also had Natalie Portman was a little bit shakier for me. It wasn't as entertaining. Yeah. But Ragnarok, which was the one that came out last, you know, right before this one, was right. one of my favorite yeah. Marvel movies.
Me too. And I think that
was it. Yeah, yeah. It was just the treatments. It was the cast, the acting. It didn't take itself too seriously, but it, you know, there was still a lot of superhero power moments, which I loved. And this one was also directed by
Taika Waititi.
I don't know.
So is he in it as well? Because I know that he's a Marvel character. Is he in it as well? Did you hear that New Zealand accent?
I did. He plays the narrator in this movie, but nice. He's also one of the characters that was in Ragnarok, in Ragnarok. Awesome. But he's a CGI, computer-generated character, so you don't actually see him, but you do hear his voice.
Yeah.
And I was reading the article that I found kind of interesting / funny the other day, and it was about Natalie Portman. As I said earlier, she wasn't in the last Thor installment at all. They didn't address her character. They didn't talk about her. Maybe just one line going by, but so she was in this one. So she got to work, you know, with Taiga, and he was, I think you talked about this on another episode, but he's in talks to be writing and having involvement with a new Star Wars project.
He's supposed to write a film.
So it was funny because working with Natalie Portman, he actually was inspired by working with her and said, "Hey, I think I have a role for you in this new Star Wars project that I'm doing." But what's funny is that fans are laughing at him because he's forgetting that Natalie Portman was already a huge character in the first three Star Wars reboots. And so fans online were having a big laugh over that.
That's so funny.
And sometimes a little controversial because they're saying, "Hey, if you're going to take over a big project like a Star Wars movie, you better know that Natalie Portman was already in it."
She's the mother of two very important characters throughout the whole entire Star Wars multiverse, whatever we call it, like the franchise. That is so funny. And isn't it funny, like you've got someone like Natalie Portman who's been around for years. Like she was a child actor. She's been in so many massive things and massive franchises that
It's hard to keep track.
It's hard to keep track. And isn't that so funny that someone like Taika Waititi, who should be into knowing where everybody is, and particularly in the Star Wars universe, if he's planning on directing or writing something, or maybe he knew and he was just like, no, I want to put her in. I want to put her in as a completely different character and just get people being like, what? What's going on? But I don't think Star Wars fans are up for that.
They've done it with Marvel. I mean, a few. I think one of the leads in the Eternals, one of the female leads, was in maybe one of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies as a different character. But they've always been smaller parts, nothing like what Natalie Portman played in the Star Wars series.
Yeah, so not Padme.
It was funny to me. Queen Amidala. With that one little hiccup aside, this movie was really, really good. It had some great moments. Christian Bale did a great job. And what's funny is that Chris Hemsworth's daughter, actually, his real biological daughter, has a role in this movie.
Oh, nice.
Which is, and I didn't know that till after having seen the movie. So it was a nice little surprise.
So this was filmed in Australia, up kind of near where the Hemsworths all live. And it was during the middle of the pandemic where at that particular point in time, Australia was pretty untouched from any sort of COVID, and they were able to get this all filmed then. I wonder if it being kind of like a destination thing, right? Like people all had to move here for several months. If the camaraderie kind of is seen on screen, like do people look like they're having a lot of fun?
Yes. There's a lot of good chemistry on here. I don't want to bring up the Amber Heard Johnny Depp thing, but I have to for a minute because, you know, she's in and out of talks to be in that Aquaman sequel that's coming out. And a lot of it has been allegedly has been around her chemistry with Jason Momoa, who's the lead character in Aquaman.
Yep.
Well, the chemistry between Chris Hemsworth and Natalie Portman is there. I mean, it's a really, really cute movie. And I don't want to give too much away, but there's a big scene. Children have a lot to do with this movie, which is cool because, you know, superheroes, it's about kids. So there's a lot of stuff about kids in this movie. And there's a big group of kids, and that's all I'm going to say. And if you want to delve a little deeper into that, you can read some stuff online. But a lot of the kids were played by the kids of famous actors.
So, nice.
You know, I said that Chris Hemsworth had his daughter in there in one of the roles. Well, so did Natalie Portman. So did Tyga.
Wow, so cool.
Yeah. And Christian Bale had his kid involved in the project. So if you read into it, it really was kind of like an on-set family kind of indie feel project. And I think everybody really enjoyed themselves, and it shows. I mean, the movie, it's got a good uplifting vibe. It's all about love, and it comes out, you know, in the vibe of the movie. It's awesome.
All right, you've convinced me. I definitely have to catch this one, whether it be at the movies or if I just wait for it to be on Disney Plus. I'm definitely going to watch it because I was looking forward to it, and I'm just really happy now to hear someone say, "Yes, it is good. It is good.
It's a standalone, really good Thor movie.
Nice.
It's a standalone, really good Marvel movie, and it's a standalone, really outstanding, actually, kids movie, because it puts kids in kind of a really fun role this time around. And, you know, kids watching in the audience, I'm sure, can use their imagination and take a big chunk of that storyline home with them and kind of recreate it at home and pretend like they get to be the superhero. And I think that is what's really special about this movie.
Yeah, nice. Speaking of special kids movies, I watched the new offering on Netflix over the weekend, The Sea Beast, which is about like a sea monster. You know, there are sea monsters that these hunters have to go and try and kill so that they can save the humans, because there's a legend that the sea monsters come up onto the land and they just start eating humans. And definitely 100% a kids movie, right? But I have to say, there were honestly some bits, particularly in the front half of this film, that are genuinely a bit scary. You know, you've got sea monsters that are coming up, and you've got fights between them, and you know, it kind of looks like pirate days. So when would that be? Like the 1700s, I think, is when the pirates were around. Not really sure, but think pirates era, right?
Right.
So you've got those kind of ships trying to go up against these giant sea monsters. And even though the sea monsters are cartoony in nature, there are still some bits where humans fall into the ocean deep down under under the surface, and it's just a little bit scary. But then it kind of starts to, once they start to show you more about these monsters of the ocean, you know, and who they potentially really are, it becomes less scary. But I just wonder if some kids are going to be a little bit too young to enjoy the first half, to get through the first half in order to enjoy the second half. I thought it was such a wonderful movie, and it's the exact kind of thing, like the great unknown. We don't understand. Therefore, as humans, we just want to attack and kill. And then suddenly we start to understand who these creatures really are. Like the story is no surprise. Like we've seen this kind of story many times before, but I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderful. That first half, I just don't know what kind of age bracket, kids wise, you know, would be able to get through that in order to enjoy the rest of it. It was kind of an odd one. Have you seen or heard anything about this one?
I have not. This is the first I'm hearing about it, but you always make them sound very interesting. I think one point that I have to bring up though is I think you and I, someone who's around our age, maybe when we think of what's viewable for kids, we kind of go backwards into our time and our standards.
But
with today's standards, kids just are exposed to so much more with YouTube and cell phones.
True.
And just the internet in general. I think that they have kind of lowered the bar on what is considered scary or terrifying for kids just purely because of how much more they're exposed to these days. So if you find it maybe something that wouldn't have been appropriate growing up for you, maybe take it a couple notches down. And so if it's any more than that, maybe it's inappropriate, but I think just a couple notches over what you expected, I think, would be about right for today's standards. Because man, I see stuff online and Facebook and social media and different things that sometimes I don't even want to see.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know kids are seeing this stuff. So it's a sad world we live in, but I mean, that's the truth of the matter. Kids have to have a thicker skin, I guess. So
yeah,
they can take scarier parts.
Yeah. Right. Movies. Well, I mean, this is by Chris Williams. He directed it. He used to work at Disney. He made Big Hero 6, Bolt. I mean, he's definitely had the experience of making films for kids. So maybe you're right. Maybe those scary bits are not as scary for kids these days as what I'm sort of thinking about. He was kind of taking it along the lines of King Kong or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which is a super old movie, that great unknown under the ocean. And maybe kids can take it. Maybe I'm being
That sounds so heartless and insensitive, but I really think that's the case. And audiences like a good scare.
Yeah,
we do.
True.
We like a good scare, whether we're kids or adults, you know. We want to be scared with as much as we can take before we pee ourselves or have to walk out of the theater.
Yeah, exactly. Hide behind the lounge. That's what I used to be like whenever I used to watch that first Star Wars movie. You know, the first time you saw Darth Vader, I'd have to go and hide behind the lounge, even though I'd seen the film, 20 times already. But
it's the breathing.
Yeah, it's the breathing. Exactly.
That's exactly. Scary. If you hear that coming towards you, I'd be scared out of my mind.
I don't want to watch it. I don't want to be a part of it. What else have you been watching?
Well, I heard you talk about it a little bit in another episode, but I got to see the Baz Luhrmann Elvis Presley movie.
Oh, you saw it. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I kind of felt a lopsidedness with the Baz Luhrmann treatment.
Yeah.
It felt Baz Luhrmann, Moulin Rouge. I was getting all those kind of feelings with it in particularly the first half of the film. And the second half of the film just felt more like just a regular,
like a biopic.
It just didn't fit. I didn't get that Baz flavor
from
the second half. And then the other problem for me with the second half was the first half of Elvis's story is much more happy and exciting. The second half is tragic.
Mm.
And for as grandioso and as notable and beautiful life as he lived, the ending was not very happy.
Yeah.
So it's hard to leave an Elvis biopic, you know, with a good feeling. And I kind of wanted to. I didn't. Spoiler alert, you know, he does pass away at the end.
What?
I think we all know that. I think we all know that. But, you know, I just thought with Boz, there would be a little more excitement, a little more fireworks. Yeah. But it didn't give me that. But all in all, it was a good biopic. And
did you learn stuff about Elvis that you didn't know beforehand?
Absolutely, because his whole career existed before I even hit the planet. But
yeah.
I know both my parents and a lot of people in my life are big fans, and so I've got some Elvis exposure. You know, I'm kind of familiar with the timeline of how things went, so and it filled in a few of the gaps for me, but it doesn't really get too particular. There's just Elvis had such a massive career, and it was a big long career, and so it was like there's just so much to fit in. And as far as Elvis personally, I didn't really get to know too much more about him than what was already out there, but I don't know. He was kind of a simple guy, so maybe there just wasn't a whole lot of depth and a whole lot of other places they could go with it.
Yeah, interesting. I the thing about Baz movies, they're so bright and colorful, and things are thrown at you from all directions, and it's almost like a sensory overload kind of thing. And I was talking about it maybe a week or two ago about the Australia movie that he made with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Jackman, and that one was felt less of that, but it was still just that epicness that he likes to put in. And I just assumed that with this Elvis one, there would be that level of epic that he would bring to it, even if there weren't all of the colors and stuff that were brought with Moulin Rouge. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, he's made so many, well, not so many, but he's made quite a few movies, right? But I think everybody, when they think of quintessential Baz Luhrmann kind of movie, it's Moulin Rouge, isn't it? You think that's the one everybody thinks of.
There is. And, you know, living in Vegas, there actually was a show in the early 2000s. I'm not exactly sure of the timeline, but it was Boz, the show, and it was a musical.
Yeah, right.
And it was an amalgamation, I guess, of all of the things that, all the projects that he had done. You know, he had some Romeo and Juliet inspired, Moulin Rouge inspired, you know, there was just everything.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to watch that show, but I do remember it. And I mean, if you like his stuff, you're a fan. If you don't, you're probably going to be okay with this one, because it's not as much going on as I thought would be. And to the point where I was a little disappointed, but only with that aspect. I thought they still did a good job telling the story and with the cast and putting it all together in a nice little package for us to watch. A nice long package.
Oh, no, a bit too long?
No, there's just not enough time to cover every cool thing about Elvis's career.
Yeah, fair enough.
The team's still tuning in for The Truman Show. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I have found myself accidentally rewatching 30 Rock, and I can't stop. Can't stop, Heath.
I love 30 Rock. Oh, I watched it in real time. I would get together with my friend after work. We would watch the new episodes. Tina Fey is hilarious. Alec Baldwin is in a lot of controversy and trouble right now.
But he was brilliant in that. You know,
he was brilliant in it.
Jack,
but we'll just skip over him for now because there's so many other good. I mean, beyond that, I mean, there's Tracy Morgan,
Jenna Maroney. Now I'm thinking
Jenna
just
Maroney.
Of the characters.
Who first came to my consciousness, and Ally McBeal. Later seasons, even Sherry Shepherd.
Yes.
It's who plays Tracy Morgan's wife.
Yeah, she's just so normal compared to his madness. Yeah, it's just such a wonderful show. And the jokes are still so funny. Like, I think I actually relate more with Liz Lemon now, because she's just like exacerbated by things that happen around her, by people who do things that annoy her. And I think, you know, I'm pretty sure the older we all get, the more annoyed with other people we get. And I think, and that's her character the whole way through. And I'm just like, oh, yes, yeah, preach it. Yes, but it's so funny. And it's been long enough now since my last watch, which was probably about 4 or 5 years ago now, that there are parts in it that I genuinely have forgotten and am really enjoying just almost watching with a fresh eye. And I can't wait to get to the John Hamm episodes because he is hilarious as her bumbling boyfriend. I think he was like a surgeon or something, I think, and he just kept getting into accidents. And
the later seasons I really could rewatch very easily because I don't remember a whole lot about them.
So funny. Then look, there are some shows that I know deep down I should not rewatch because I will not enjoy them as much as I did the first time. But 30 Rock is 100% not that kind of show. You can go back and watch that one and just enjoy it as much as you did, or if not even more, the first time. And I'm so happy I started the rewatch and I can't stop. I'm going to get through the whole thing. I just know I am.
Let me just say, Tina Fey is, I love her style of humor, her style of writing. It's so deep and there's so many layers that you can rewatch and miss jokes or reinterpret jokes. And that's the beautiful thing about Tina Fey. And that's why I give anything that she is a part of a chance. And I know you're probably going to wonder what I've been rewatching.
Yeah, but go on.
I haven't been rewatching because I've been focused on the future and watching new things.
Nice.
But what I have been doing, Leah, is I've been re-listening. And I've been re-listening to some episodes of The Watchers podcast.
Hey!
And in one of the last episodes, I heard something from you that really disappointed me, to say.
Oh, no. What'd I say?
And so that being said, I'm going to give you a rewatching assignment.
Okay.
Because I think it's fundamental that we revisit this movie that we just talked about, which was Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. And I know that we talked about it from the perspective of Tyra Banks is doing the reboot, whatever. I don't care. I'm completely against that. I'm against anything Tyra's in. I think that this movie is one of the masterpieces of the 90s and should not be remade. And if it is going to be remade, it needs to be the original cast only. Forget about Tyra and the reworking. Anyway, long story short, I need you to go back and rewatch that because you told me, or you didn't tell me personally, but I heard on the podcast.
Yes.
You could not tell me, you could not give one quote from this iconic masterpiece movie. And I was so disappointed because I quote this movie almost every single day. And I'm going to give you two good ones, two zingers right off the bat.
Yeah.
The first one is, the dishes are done, man. And everybody should know that quote in life. The dishes are done, man, because that's one of the best quotes. And then the second one, which I use all the time in life, is, I'm right on top of that, Rose.
Right on top of that rose.
And if you want, the dishes are done, man, and I'm right on top of that rose are two of the most iconic quotes from this movie. And so if you have nothing else quote-wise from this movie, I offer you those two and also an assignment for you this week to go back and rewatch. And anybody listening who hasn't watched or hasn't in a long time, watch Don't Tell Mom, The Babysitter's Dead with Christina Applegate because you should have it in your DVD collection. You should have a copy on VHS. It should be on all your streaming devices. This movie
is
one of the best movies of the 90s.
I wonder if I do have it on VHS somewhere. I'm going to have to go and have a look through. I'm straight into the garage straight after work today. Just make sure that I've got that. What a passionate rewatching suggestion that was. All right, it's on my list
of things to do. I put a lot of heart into it.
Yeah.
I'm not really disappointed in you, but I want you to go back. And
I think I'll enjoy it. Yeah, the babysitter doesn't last long, does she? Like she's there for maybe 10 minutes, from memory.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm still against Tyra. You still can't sell me on Tyra for this.
Yeah, I know. Tyra. Just anyway. Do you have any more watching suggestions or should we get into these listener questions? We've got a few good ones and I think one particularly that only you can answer.
Well, I saw Thor, Love and Thunder. I saw Elvis. So I definitely, for me this week, it's going to just be go watch those.
Yeah,
because
nice.
They're out right now. It's current. And we haven't been able to go to movies in a while, depending on where you live. So go do it. Have some fun. Watch those.
Perfect.
So let's get into the questions.
This one's from Jacob. if someone tells you to watch a movie or TV show because it's the best thing they've ever seen, do you go into it watching it with like trepidation so you don't like get disappointed by the huge hype recommendations? You know, I've said this before, Heath, and I'll say it again. I don't think you should give a movie or TV show the biggest rap in the world when you're recommending it to someone. I think you should be like, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of fun and these are the reasons why. See what you think, enjoy it. Because if you overhype things, it's never going to be anywhere near as good as your hype. You know what I mean?
Totally. I totally get it. It's really about that moment. Because when I tell, I want that bonding moment with somebody. Oh, you've seen that? I've seen it too. Yeah. What's your favorite part? I love that. You know, that's magic. And, yeah. You know, that's how you create. I formed a really good work relationship one time over something like that. And if it hadn't been for that, I don't know if I would have talked to that person. But to be passionate about something or like something together and to share that experience is really special. So that's what we're all really looking for. And so just as fun as it is to agree on it, it does kind of sting a little bit when you offer up something that you're really excited about somebody and they come back with kind of like a mixed bag of reactions.
Yeah, just or like lukewarm.
They don't watch it at all.
Oh yeah, that's even worse.
It can be a little heartbreaking because, you know, it is what it is. Our tastes are things like that in film and music and movies. It's all very personal to us. So when we offer something up, sometimes it can be a little scary. So I totally get where you're going with it. But for me, I don't suggest a whole lot to a whole lot of people.
Yeah, right.
So if I take the time to tell you about something, then rewatch it or watch it because I'm passionate about it. And with that being said, I don't fall back. So if the person doesn't like it, there's something wrong with the person because
it's their fault.
It's
I love
about
it.
Me.
So good.
Not my taste. My taste is tried and true, baby.
So good. I totally get what you say with the music though. Like for particularly, I think music is the most personal taste.
Totally. So personal.
So when you do end up, you know, having that connection with people like, oh, you really like that singer. Me too. What songs are you like? Oh, that's your favorite as well. Like that bond right there is as tight as well. It could ever be with anyone.
Yeah. And it's important. So I think that's why we reach out to people. And I think that's why it's also scary. It can be hard to get, you know, to get their critique on it. And it's funny that we take things like that personally, even though we had nothing to do with the creation of the project.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, I had nothing to do with it. But if I did, I definitely would have done it the exact same way. Like, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
So, too good.
But like I said, it's a taste issue and it's usually on the other person. So
Yeah. That's so funny. Okay. This one is from Katie. She said, I'm off on a 3-night vacation to Vegas with old college friends. What do you recommend we do and see? I haven't been there for quite a few years. As you know, the last time I was there, we were hanging out and we were having a lot of fun. We kept driving past one particular establishment that we will not mention, but we never got in. It was never open. And I just love the fact that we've got that story. But we did do a lot of other things, but I'm not sure how many of those things still exist there in Vegas.
Well, the funny thing about the place that we kept trying to go is that I guess it's just so exclusive. They just made us feel, I don't know whether that made us want to go there more or like we weren't worthy or I don't know why we kept going. But
oh, so funny. Yeah,
no, Vegas is always, always, always changing.
Yeah.
And they're always trying to appeal to a different demographic. And, you know, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. And then sometimes they go a direction, then they backtrack and go old school. So it's always changing. There are some shows that I do want to shout out, though. I'm just going to do a little quick research here because I want to make sure. Okay. So I was lucky enough to get a few experiences taken care of at a show that's put on by Spiegelworld. So
Spiegelworld.
Spiegelworld.
Okay.
Yeah. Basically, they do different shows in Las Vegas. So there's a series of shows that they do. One is called Absent. I actually can't remember the name of the other two at this time, but they're similar to each other, but each show kind of has a different vibe.
Yeah, right.
You can expect to see kind of the same kind of acts. But what they are is they're just talent acts. And a lot of times they'll be in different tents. I know Absinthe, I think, is at Caesar's Palace on the Strip. Mm-hmm. And it sits inside a little circus tent. So there's a circus vibe, and there's acrobats, and there's sword swallowers, and there's special talents. And it's stuff that is just classic entertainment.
Yeah, fun.
And you're so surprised about how awesome it is. You know, just the tent vibe, and, you know, kind of a smoke-filled room. Mm. And they have acrobats and hosts and joke telling and stunts, and they're amazing. And there's a series of like three shows, and I know Absinthe is one of them, but if you just go online and look up Spiegel World,
okay,
they'll be able to check out the other shows that they have to offer at different locations on the Strip as well. So definitely do that. It's just funny though, cause you know, my full-time gig is to be a bartender on the Strip. And this question is something that I get asked constantly. And it really does just depend on your taste though, because like we were just talking about, you know, my thing may not be your thing. Yeah, my vibe may not be your vibe. So that's what I recommend. But the cool thing about Vegas is there's something for everybody. So if you want to see, like we were talking about, off-Broadway shows, you can go down to the Smith Center. You know, you can see Lion King at Mandalay Bay if it's playing. So there's a lot of things to do. So my number one thing when people come to me with that question is I say, just really do your research. Mm. Go online, Google everything. See what really speaks to you, because if I just start throwing different things at you, you're going to be overwhelmed. There's so much cool stuff to do.
What about, because when I think of the fun times that we have had in Vegas, one was definitely when we went to a buffet. I can't even remember where it was, but just sitting there and having a look at all the different varieties of foods on offer in a buffet. Like, I think that's such a Vegas experience that I would always want to do whenever I go there. Are there some that you would say you can't miss it? If you want to go to a buffet, these are the ones that are worth your while?
Well, fortunately for you, you had that experience pre-COVID-19.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Since that, a lot of the buffets have been really kind of a sensitive topic, just because all the food handling and all the different people touching it. So a lot of them have closed down, but you can't have Vegas without your classic buffets, like you mentioned. So there are still the top of the line ones. We went to one at the M, which is an off-Strip property. And the reason we chose that one is because that particular buffet includes free alcoholic beverages. It's in the price of admission. I don't know that they're free, but they're in the price of admission. Draft beer, wine. And I thought that was fun because we were on vacation at that time. We were interested in having some adult libations. But if you want to check out stuff that's actually on the Strip, the Cosmopolitan has one of the greatest buffets in town. I remember one of the dishes being bone marrow.
Oh, that's a bit swish.
Very. So if you want to eat crazy exotic stuff, you know, on a little fancy plate, tapas style plate that you have never tried, definitely the Cosmopolitan on the Strip.
Okay. Cosmopolitan sounds good.
Caesar's Palace is top of the line.
Yeah. Right.
Any kind of, upscale casino like the Bellagio or the Wynn or something like the MGM Grand, all of these places are going to have buffets that are going to blow your minds.
Oh, can we just go back to the M and just do the exact same thing that we did before? I would be
absolutely
so happy. Oh my gosh.
And what's fun about the M is that's like more of a local spot. So
yeah, right.
It's a little different experience than you get on the Strip. So if you're looking for something a little more laid back, like we were that weekend, they have a really nice pool too.
I don't think we did a pool, did we? I think we were far too busy driving past establishments that were closed. And we went to the dam, Hoover Dam. That was really cool too.
Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam tour is fascinating. It's one of the wonders of the world. It's a bit sad right now just because our water levels are the lowest they've been since the 80s.
Yeah, right.
There's a drought. So that's a little shocking to the eye when you go out there and see that. But the tour we did in the middle of the summer, it can be really hot. But if you are brave enough to go endure the sun and a little bit of casual rock climbing and walking around, then it's definitely worth doing the tour of the dam, because it's iconic. And I think it's also been showcased on a few Vegas movies, like, you know, Vegas Vacation and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, there's been, I can't recall right off the top of my head exactly what movies, but I think I've seen it in a few movies. So
yeah.
If you want that experience, then definitely check that out, because it was, we had a blast.
Yeah, we had so much fun. Oh, all right, we're going to have to organize it again soon. All right, put that on the list of things to do. final question. This one is from Craig. He says, what show do you know is rubbish, but you love anyway and you can't stop watching it? Well, I mean, I think I spoke about it last week. Four in a Bed is really bad, but I can't stop watching it. Another one, I don't know if there's a US equivalent of this. There was definitely an Australian version, but I've been watching the UK version, which is the original. And it's called Location, Location, Location. And it's two people who are real estate kind of agents, and they'll go around with people looking for homes to buy, and they'll suggest all of these maybe three or four houses, and if the people don't like it, I think her name's Christy, Kirsty, she just gets angry with them. And I love it because it's not her place to get angry or have any sort of say in it. But if they don't like the offerings that she suggested, she gets really antsy, and I just think it's hilarious.
It's always fun with reality shows to catch those real unscripted moments, which are very far and few between these days.
Yeah,
but
true.
I remember there's an old episode of the show, which is kind of in the same vein, Trading Spaces, where two friends swap houses and work with an interior designer that they get assigned, and then they surprise each other. And there was one classic episode with where the homeowner had a really bad reaction to what they had done to their home, and it was classic. So I mean, yeah, it's all about those moments, really. Those are the most hilarious, and
because you can't stop watching them. You've made me actually think about The Wife Swap. Do you remember the show Wife Swap, and the lady, and she was like screaming about demons
and gaga, it's ungodly, it's dark-sided.
Dark-sided.
I don't want it in my house. I want you gone. The camera crews, everybody gone. Get out. Ungodly.
I'm gonna have to watch that again. Not the whole episode, just that video. That's all. Oh gosh, that was.
Let's see. Those are the moments. I mean, I guess now and in this day and age, you would consider those viral moments.
Yeah,
but back then, they were just. That's what reality TV. I mean, those were the climactic moments for reality TV. Is basically when the first person would have their real moment and let their guard down in front of the cameras and have a real temper fit or have a real cry or have whatever it was. I mean, those were awesome.
Gosh, it was funny. Yeah. And you're right. Going back to those older ones where they were less scripted and these moments were real. Even watching them today, having like in the lead up to knowing that this scene is going to happen, it's just so good. Oh my gosh.
Well, I have a confession.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty big one.
Oh my gosh.
When Tom comes back, or if he listens to this episode, I don't know that I'll ever be invited back as a guest again, but I have to be true to myself and admit this. And it's actually a topic that we're not supposed to discuss on this podcast, but I'm going to go there because it's my moment. And one show that I absolutely know is rubbish, but it's also a train wreck that I can't look away from right now, is The New Kardashians on Hulu. And Leah, I have never in my life watched an episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
Until now.
Something about this new series that they did is just so polished and so swish, as you would say.
Yeah.
And it just, they just all look amazing now. And it's just so much more interesting because they just have so much more going on. Like, you know, Kim doing SNL and the projects that they do are just so much more high profile.
Yeah.
There's no more of the kind of side characters. It became more about.
Do you ever see Rob?
It did.
Like Rob, I remember the brother was a bit like he was put on the sideline a fair bit.
And he has no involvement in the show.
Yeah,
just primarily focuses on the female Kardashians.
Yeah,
and it's,
right.
And I love, I don't know, but I can't stop watching it. I don't know why. I've never enjoyed them, but it's part envy, I guess. I mean, we all want to live that lavish lifestyle and just have money be no object, but it's also part let me see like how they navigate this world where they can literally do and have anything that they want and look any way they want. And, you know, it's just, it's something I can't look away from. I like those kind of freak shows, and the Kardashians, with as polished as they are, they have become like the world's fanciest freak show.
They should have that as a byline. I love it.
And sadly, I'm buying right into it. I never thought this day would come. I know that that's not a topic we're supposed to discuss on The Watchers, and I just hope that I get invited back someday.
You will, you will. It's fine.
It was just a momentary lapse of judgment, I swear.
Oh, no. Look, we've all got our moments. We've all got the stuff. We've all got the shows that we can't stop watching. I mean, Steph has been on here in the past talking about all of the Real Housewives that she watches. We all watch stuff. We all watch different stuff, and that's the beauty of it.
Well, but still, as I'm impressed. I mean, I know you're right. I just never thought it would happen to me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Heath, this has been so much fun. I really don't think that we should allow it go so far between your guest appearances on this. It's absolutely not so fun.
Sign me up. I'll be the mascot if you want.
Yay!
I'll do any. You need the floors mopped up in the studio, toilet clean. I'm your man.
Oh, I love it. Well, obviously pouring the drinks and making sure all the cocktails are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you're definitely the man. Yeah, definitely. Usually what I say at the end is I say, you know, Tom, thank you very much. And he says something random. So let's see how we go. I'm just buying a bit of time, padding it for you so you can get ready to say something ridiculous. And here we go. On that note, Heath, thank you very much.
Leah, it's been such a pleasure. I want to wish all of you hunka hunka burning love and thunder, baby.